Cosmetic Course Podcast, episode 15. This is Adrian Richards, and today I'm going to be talking to Ron Myers about issues such as counterfeit toxins and ongoing regulation in the aesthetic industry in the UK. So I'm here today with Ron Myers from the consulting room. Hello, Ron.
Hi, Adrian.
So I thought we'd talk today about the whole issue of products, where you get them from. And I know you've recently had an email, and I certainly have, from a Chinese company offering Botox for a very low price. So I just sort of wondered your views on that, Ron.
Well, I mean, this isn't unique and novel, but it's something that I think is increasing as the market grows and as more and more clinics and practitioners are using this product. I mean, this is a multi-million dollar industry worldwide, and so you can understand why some companies might want to try and take a chunk of it. I think the $20 a vial, which is what it was advertised for, Botox, and that's for 150 units as well. We can choose it in 100 or 150 unit vials. Is just, obviously incredibly low. It's about sort of 13 quid in sterling terms. And certainly versus the, say, Botox, which would be, say, face price £138, you can understand why some people might be tempted. And when we contacted this company as well and sort of probed it a little bit further, there were no minimum orders, so they were happy to send across just one vial that you could try. And they were happy to send it in plain packaging to avoid customs as well.
Where were they based, Ron?
They're based actually in China. A lot of this was done over the internet. We weren't exactly sure where they were actually physically based, because even though they might have had sort of address contact details, you weren't exactly sure that that was where they were operating from. And this isn't unique as well. I mean, you might think of, sort of Chinese copies of products being, sort of unique area from the Far East. But this happened in America back in sort of 2004, and there were several doctors who got fined through purchasing. It was research-based toxin from a company called Toxin Research International.
Yeah.
And actually on the labels it said for research purposes only. And these people bought this product and used them in their clinics to treat people for wrinkles. And they treated hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and over a course of a couple of years. And in fact, there was also another case as well where a doctor actually went to another doctor with his wife and actually got botulism, because the amount that they actually injected was far more than they should have done.
And they were ventilated for quite a long time because of the obviously paralysed their muscles, didn't it?
That's correct. It was a chap actually top of my head. It was called Dr. Eric Kaplan, and he actually wrote a book about it, actually called "Dying to Be Young: From Botox to Botulism," which is quite interesting as well. And that was released a few years ago. So, there are a number of stories sort of out there, not just from China, but also I think in the States, and I'm sure probably other countries as well, where there are people that will look at certainly more the commercial aspects rather than the, I think, the thing that hopefully most people would do, which is looking at approved versions and safety aspects.
Yeah.
And if you look specifically at botulinum toxin as well, just from a safety perspective, because remember here, even though this product has a fantastic safety profile, if you know how to use it and you're using the approved versions, every batch of product that is manufactured and used in the UK is actually independently evaluated for potency by the National Institute for Biological Standards and Control. So the whole idea is when companies like Allergan, for instance, who have a big manufacturing plant in Westport in Ireland, and that's a European plant, manufacture a batch, they will send some samples of that to the NIBSC, who can then basically try and ratify and evaluate the fact that the vials do agree to a certain tolerance in terms of the number of units in there. And I think there's an allowable deviation of around 10%. Now, clearly, if they got it wrong by 100 or 200%, there may be some issues there with spread of toxin and, potential issues, certainly when using it on the face. If you're getting Chinese Botox, God knows what the tolerance levels are.
Yeah, actually, do you think anyone's actually using it in the UK, Ron?
Well, do you know, it's just impossible to really know. I mean, you know, one would hope not, but we can understand that some people, you know, just look really at the money sometimes, and they will be tempted. And if they, you know, buy a vial and try it maybe on a friend or two and it seems okay, whatever that means, you can understand why they might buy more.
Yeah.
And certainly with fillers as well, because this company was also advertising fillers, so you could get hyaluronic acid sort of based fillers that you could buy in particle sizes from 10 to 100 to 200,000 as well in you know, 1 mil syringes. So, you know, again, very, very cheap, low-cost fillers. And there are also some issues potentially as well of counterfeit products as well now on the market. So it's a little bit like, you know, a Prada handbag or a Rolex watch that's fake at first glance. It may be pretty much indistinguishable from the genuine article. And there are some of the bigger manufacturers, you know, like QMed and Allergan, that are really worried about this as well now and worried about these getting into the supply chain. And, you know, people buying counterfeit products who aren't aware of them.
Yeah, so it's really very, very interesting, isn't it? So you presume because they're sending the emails out, someone is buying them?
Well, one would imagine so, yes. You know, I can't imagine they just sit on a stock load of this and just keeping sending emails out and nobody's buying. I mean, that, you know, probably won't happen. I'm sure some people will be buying them somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd agree with me, Ron. I mean, we've talked about this before, but you know, our advice, I think, would be to anyone out there, you know, only buy from, you know, recognised distributors. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think the only way you can be sure, and I think especially if there are potentially some issues with counterfeit products as well, is to buy either direct from the manufacturer in the UK. Then you obviously you should be 100% sure that you're going to get the right product, or what I would call from approved distribution sources that the manufacturer approves. So in other words, you know that they ship products direct to that company, like Health Exchange, Medifex, or Wigmore Medical. They're all three well-known companies that have been involved in this distributing toxins and fillers for a number of years in the UK, and I think those would be certainly safe companies to buy from. There are a number of other independent pharmacies out there as well who do certainly supply toxins and fillers, and some of those aren't approved by the distributors, and so some of those can get in what they call either grey imports or, you know, from other sources as well. So I would just stick with the approved sources from a distribution point
of
view.
Yeah, I think that's very, very, very sensible. So, you know, these are very powerful, potentially dangerous products. So, you know, used in the wrong hands, you know, as in those people that got, botulism and on the ventilators, you know, you really don't want that at all. So steer away from...
Well, and I honestly think from a legal perspective, if there was a problem, I think there would be, you would have obviously a massive issue, both from your own, you know, GMC perspective or NMC, and potentially from a business perspective as well, because this kind of stuff does, you know, get out in the press. And so it's just not worth it if you're looking at building a long-term business model in this arena. You know, safety first, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, I'd 100% agree with that. Ron, sort of moving on from that, I mean, you talked a little bit about how the UK is used as a bit of a testing ground for new products. Could you just enlarge on that a little bit?
Yeah, principally because I think this is certainly the case with fillers, whereby because they're registered as medical devices in Europe, they don't have to go the same sort of stringent testing measures that a pharmaceutical product like botulinum toxin would.
Do they in the United States, Ron?
No, in the United States it's a lot stricter. They have to go through FDA approval in the States. And so what happens is that products, basically, I think of a company called Physiomed recently that were based in the States, undergoing clinical trials over there, couldn't actually promote or sell it in the US, but actually launched it here in the UK about 3-4 years ago now. It's a product called Lares, and that got used by a number of people and quietly withdrawn after a couple of years. I don't think there were any particular concerns from a safety perspective, even though this wasn't a hyaluronic acid based product or collagen based product, But I think there were concerns that it didn't actually perform or last as long as they originally predicted. And then you have other products like Dermalife, which is a permanent filler that certainly ran into a number of problems. And as you know, I'm sure you've probably seen one or two cases, either at presentations or maybe even personally refer from other people of people who've had problems with permanent fillers.
Yeah.
That, you know, are very, very difficult to deal with. And I know there have been a number of sort of lawsuits that have come out as a result of Dermalife. And the company that was involved in distributing, this is a third-party distributor in the UK, sort of washed their hands of it. And then the original corporation, I think, promoted it, went into liquidation, and this is what tends to happen.
Yes.
So the consumer then doesn't really have a route to chase, apart from probably the individual clinic, who then is, you know, all practitioners. So I think another product was Outline as well that sort of came and went. So there are a number of products out there, but even, you know, recently as well with Novabel that was launched. I actually went to the launch at IMCAS in Paris. And this was, you know, had a big pharma company, Merck Pharmaceuticals, behind it, who was already in the market with a toxin, which was Xeomin, or now Bocature, which is the licensed version for wrinkles. Launched the product in January. Probably really launched it in the UK in, I think it was March, April time, and then withdrew it literally in June.
So, I mean, it was only really available for a couple of months, wasn't it?
Only available for a couple of months, absolutely.
Well, why did they? Why initially, was it? Why was it withdrawn, Ron?
Well, they found indurations and nodules in some patients, and especially in the periorbital area. And the problem was, I think, with this product in particular, was that it was marketed as a facial shaper.
Yeah.
And marketed as a very, very smooth product as well. It's quite an unusual product. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not, but under low pressure, it's like water. It comes out of a needle really, really easily.
Yeah.
But then when you apply more pressure to it, it comes out slower. So it's a thixotropic substance. And the idea with this is that when you're injecting this in, you can actually really shape and mold it. And some of the original investigators really liked to use it under the eye because they felt that it had a much, much smoother edge and contour to it than putting in an HA filler, where you can maybe feel the edge or the rim.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, under eye treatment anyway is fraught with dangers and problems.
Yeah.
Even in, you know, very, very skilled hands, and even with the use of an HA filler, that you know that potentially if there is an issue, you can certainly dissolve with a hyaluronidase.
Yeah.
But the problem with Novabel is because it's an alginate-based filler, there isn't that little trick up your sleeve to get rid of it. And so I think they found then with people who had some problems with nodules, so obviously there's some form of reaction to the product, is that what do you do?
Yeah. So obviously with the sort of testing around something really for the United States, and if something, you know, is proved to work and be safe, then it is used in the States, isn't it?
Well, I think the testing is much more stringent over there, and the patient numbers, and I think follow up in terms of assessing these perhaps rarer complications, and also looking at the outcomes of those as well in terms of, well, what happens when those are followed through and what can you do about them,
is
a lot more robust in the US. And so, you know, I would still say that the vast majority of practitioners in the UK, their main base would be a hyaluronic acid filler.
Yeah.
You know, the probably the three best-known brands that are currently marketed in the UK would be Juvederm, Restylane and Tearcel. And I would say certainly if you're looking at from a safety first perspective, any one of those products would be, you know, something that you would be looking at as your baseline filler.
So again, you know, so what would you advise us? The rep comes to you or you go to a conference and they say there's this great new stuff. Would you use it or would you wait for other people to use it?
I think I would only use it if I was a very, very experienced practitioner and if I was tied in probably to some form of research-based, trial-based initial assessment of the product, rather than just be giving a low, you know, like 20 syringes and say, well, have a go.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, what tends to happen in practice in the marketplace. You know, that's, you know, a reality is that companies will come in and give a load of product out in order to get people to use it. And of course, if it's free, then there is an incentive there for people to use it from a commercial perspective. But it certainly, I think, if it's a novel concept or a different type of a filler, then I will be very, very cautious initially.
So you
certainly want to wait, I think, a year or so for I would say, volume commercial use for some of these issues to be ironed out.
Yeah. So I suppose the messages we're getting are sort of, if you get any offer of cheap product, it's too good to be true, so delete those emails and only go for tried and tested sort of, products from good distributors. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, if you think of the patients or clients that are coming through for these types of treatments, they're looking to improve and enhance the way that they look. They don't want to look worse in any way, shape or form or have any problems, and you don't want them to either. And I think the more you stray away from proven products, from proven sources of supply, then the more likely you are to run into problems that you're then going to have to deal with. And that can be costly, time-consuming, and potentially dangerous. So it depends on where you sit on that risk profile. But I think in this business, you really want to be, have a risk profile that certainly sits on the border of, waiting for other people to test these products first rather than you being the entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think that's very sensible. Now, Ron, I'm just going to put you on the spot now. So we're recording this at the beginning of September 2010. Just finished the summer holidays. And traditionally, sort of up to Christmas is a busy time for the non-surgical business.
Absolutely.
So what's your prediction? How do you feel the market is at the moment? And what's your prediction it's going to be until Christmas?
Well, I actually think looking at the clinic that we run ourselves as well, we've had a very robust year. And certainly this year has been better than last year. We've had, up until this point, I think, pretty much record months. And certainly looking across the board as well, some of the more established clinics have been finding that as well, that this year has certainly been better than the previous year. So I think I predict good, solid growth, really. The other issues that maybe will revolve around this will be looking at where that growth goes and who gets the bigger chunk of the pie, if you see what I mean. Now, the IHAS that I know we spoke about before as well, it's the Independent Healthcare Advisory Services, who are launching the self-regulation scheme for injectable treatments. So this is the Treatments You Can Trust website, are going ahead with a press launch literally this Friday. So that's September the 10th. And it will be interesting to see the uptake by the press and also whether or not that does have an impact in terms of consumers looking for clinics that are registered with that particular self-regulation scheme. At the moment, if you look at their website, there is not a huge number of clinics registered. So you've got Skin, Transform, I think, Harley Med, and probably a handful of independent clinics out there that have bought into the scheme currently. But that may be, an interesting sort of area.
Which is the website? Can you remind us, Ron, where
it's
people...
It's called treatmentsyoucantrust.co.uk. The other issue as well that is products like Novabel that have been withdrawn recently, and I know that some of the people that I think have had problems as well were journalists.
Yeah.
And whether or not some adverse media may come about as a result of that around fillers, that may have a detrimental impact. But certainly, I think a lot of the messages that have come out increasingly over the last year or so, and of course some of the issues that we discussed here, although it'll mainly be people who are really focused on this industry will understand that, does leak out into the mainstream press as well. And I think there is that element there of consumers being potentially concerned. Very interesting report that I read recently by Key Facts, I think it was a company that pulled together a little bit like Mintel.
Yeah.
And pull together a stat shot of the UK marketplace, looking at trends and statistics. One of the points that they drew out were that people in the higher social economic classes, the sort of so-called A group, were particularly concerned about these sorts of issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, where they could go, who they could trust, whether these things and treatments were safe or not, which is quite interesting because, again, those are the people as well that potentially have more disposable income to spend on these treatments.
Yes.
So I think, you know, there is something very valid there about, you know, some of these very, very real issues here of dangers and, you know, and people being adversely affected by these treatments.
Yeah.
And bad press that could have an impact on our market as we go forward.
Yeah. I think some of the studies have shown, haven't they, that one of the reasons for people not having the treatment or thinking about it but not having it is concerns about safety.
Yes.
So that in your marketing, you know, perhaps you should, you know, stress the safety aspect.
Well, I would agree. And obviously the companies that have bought into the self-regulation scheme where obviously, some of these standards really relate to training issues, health and safety issues in terms of how you run and operate the clinic, and maybe even also looking at those approved sources of purchasing products that the consumer knows and understands exactly what product and what brand that you bought and you're using on them. And of course, that really should be included in any form of consent process as well. Is on a consent form. Consumers should know and understand the brand as well as the generic product, whether it's hyaluronic acid or botulinum toxin, so they know exactly what you've injected into them. You know, all of those things I think should be in place in a clinic anyway, but I think are sort of being embedded more in this self-regulation scheme as being key points of differentiation.
Brilliant. Well, Ron, I mean, we certainly covered a lot of topics there, so it'd be interesting to see how this launch goes. So perhaps we could talk, you know, in the next episode about that. And
absolutely.
You know, so thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate that. And
thank you, Adrian.
And yeah, we'll keep our eyes posted on that launch.
Wonderful. Okay.
Yeah. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye.
So thanks again for listening to the podcast, and a big thank you to Ron for sharing his thoughts with us today. As I've mentioned previously, we're going to be producing regular podcasts with Ron on clinical and non-clinical issues. And if you've got any feedback about the podcast, please email us at info@cosmeticcourses.co.uk. You may also want to have a look through our new academy, which is on cosmetic-courses.co.uk, which has got lots of training material and videos on it. So again, what we're aiming to do is sort of update you on what's happening in the industry. Any feedback or any questions would be gratefully received, and we'd be happy to answer them in a future episode of the podcasts. So again, thanks for listening, and until next time, I hope all goes well.